hey, guess what? Shopify Masters is now on YouTube. You can watch our interviews on YouTube. Just search for Shopify Masters. And as always, thank you for listening or watching. Now, without further ado, here is this week's episode.
8 weeks to sell out 6 months of product was nothing that we could have ever imagined.
Hey, what's going on? Benjamin Gottlieb here, and you are watching Shopify on Location from Los Angeles. We're meeting with two of the three co-founders of Ghost Town Oats, Michelle Johnson and Ezra Baker.
I don't see anyone talking about how Black people and people of color are more lactose intolerant than anybody else. That is, like, to me, such low-hanging fruit for a demographic that you can sell to.
Their oat milk company is doing something that many brands dream of. They're bringing healthy ingredients, healthy food, to folks who want it and they need it.
We didn't have access. We had to, like, make do with what we had.
This marriage of social change and good product is at the heart of why we're chatting with them today. Michelle, Ezra, welcome.
What's going
Thank
on?
You.
So happy to have you, and what a treat to be here in this space here in Los Angeles. Let's start with this. Entrepreneurs are problem solvers at their core. So, Michelle, why oat milk, of all things?
It was a very natural progression for us to choose oat milk. And at least for me, the story kind of dates back to my own childhood. I grew up very, very poor, underneath poverty, if you will, back in D.C. We lived in a lot of homeless shelters, motels, other people's homes, really. And those food boxes that we would get from, like, church donations and stuff like that, that was a lot of what we had available to us for food. And then when we would live in our own apartment, we were always walking so far to get to a grocery store. And oftentimes, like with, you know, the food stamp card that we had available, 7-Eleven was the closest thing. So that was where we ended up going to get most of the things, at least just like the basics, like milk, cheese, eggs, ho-hos, you know, to have for the house. So from there, you know, my becoming a barista later on, not only was that like an opportunity for me to kind of take myself out of that situation, but it introduced me to better quality just ingredients to make beverages. And that's where I was like, oh, well, I knew that there were good things out there. But this whole like specialty coffee world that I'm now finding myself stumbling into, like my mom doesn't know anything about this. My family still thinks I work at Starbucks. Like, this is just like, okay.
And these memories of walking what probably seemed like miles and miles as a young child.
Absolutely.
This sits with you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the oldest of five children of my mother's kids, and we are all born within 5 years. So it wasn't just one of us going, it was all of us going. Or my parents were sending me and two of my siblings to go walk on our own at all hours of the day and night. I have memories of literally going to the store to get things for the house at like 9-10 o'clock at night by myself.
I mentioned earlier that entrepreneurs at their core really are problem solvers. And I'm curious, Ezra, when you hear Michelle's story, are there things that resonate with you? Do you have a similar experience?
Kind of, but mine was more geographic, I guess. You know, I'm from rural South Georgia. The closest store was like 10 miles away or so.
My goodness.
So we didn't have access. We kind of like, we couldn't get to somewhere really quickly. We just kind of like make do with what we had. So I think we were always problem solving, like, okay, how can we have better access to eggs? So my grandma would raise chickens and we would get the chickens. And like, how can we have vegetables year round and not have to go to the store? Oh, you plant a garden and you freeze. And the worst part is shelling and picking them. Like, we would, you know, a complete summer day would be like, you know, waking up at 7 a.m., picking peas, then shelling peas all day long.
Oh, my God.
And then so my mom could freeze them and put them up.
That's why I lived in the city.
Yeah, we have like a deep chest full of peas. So it was like, yeah, you're right. It's like everything is problem solving, like constantly.
Well, my daughter is 1 year old, and she loves peas and pea pods, although Aww. That sounds like it's a little bit more difficult than what we
Oh, no, it's like thousands and thousands and thousands of peas.
So I'm hearing a couple of things. I'm hearing self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also hearing resiliency. Let's bring that together with you two, bringing both of these experiences and skills together. How did you two meet, and when did this idea of starting your own business together come about?
Well, all of my life I had to fight. And I showed up to work, and
where'd you work at the time?
Where were you working?
At a coffee shop in New York, in like the west side. And Michelle was there. And I said, hi, you wrote that article.
This is actually very true. And the us sitting together like this on this couch is very much exactly how it was in that coffee shop. So I'll fill in here. I was in 2016, I had just left from working as a full-time barista and going forth into the world of having my own creative blog called The Chocolate Barista. Now, I was not trying to be disruptive in any way. I thought it was funny naming it The Chocolate Barista because people would come into the coffee shop and say very outlandish things about how they wanted their coffee, like they're women, tall and dark and Ethiopian. I'm not that.
You know, that's not also not specific to you.
I,
not
well,
that you
no,
knew.
Yeah.
I've had that said to me too, and I'm shut up, 475.
For sure. But when I named it The Chocolate Barista, people asked that. I was like, no, I just think it's funny. But I did write a blog about my experience being a Black woman in the coffee world, and it had blown up. I mean, just like completely taken over the specialty coffee industry on a worldwide scale.
And Ezra read that article.
Ezra read that article. So I walked into this coffee shop in New York. I was on my way down to D.C. to go visit my family. And Ezra literally sat down and was like, hey, you're that girl that wrote that article. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, cool. And then we didn't say anything. And then after about a couple minutes.
I was having my me time before my shift.
He was about to work. I was about to leave. And that was it. But we did end up cultivating a relationship. Mostly online. And it wasn't until maybe about 2019 that I was playing. I used to play in these parties called the Chocolate Barista Party at the annual Coffee Expo.
Okay.
And the one in 2019 was in Boston. And I just came back from Australia from having a whirlwind of a time down there. And I was like, I need to plan this party, but we got 2 weeks. And Ezra was like, I got you. I'll be there to help. And in 2 weeks, we raised like $25,000 for the party, got sponsorships, merch designed. And
for Ezra, this event.
For this event, yeah. And Ezra was like, you know, if we ever worked together, we would be really, really good. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then just went on with my life.
Yes.
And then 2020 ended up happening, pandemic. We're all just kind of at home, not doing much. You weren't working at Stumptown anymore. Mm-mm. I wasn't working at Red Bay Coffee. So we're all just kind of coffee consulting freelance on the side. And there is a third co-founder, Eric, who also was just like, had just moved to LA right before the pandemic. And so when the idea for an oat milk came to us, it actually came to us through a consulting project. And the thought that I had was like, you know, that's a really good idea, but it can't just be what we already see in the plant-based milk space right now. Like, I don't see anyone talking about how Black people and people of color are more lactose intolerant than anybody else. And that is, like, to me, such low-hanging fruit for a demographic that you can sell to. Because the problem isn't that people aren't going to spend the money. It's that they don't have access to it to spend that money.
And you're lactose intolerant yourself.
And I'm very lactose intolerant.
Or also they don't know that it's a product that is accessible and is available to them. And even they can experience this thing that they only see, like, you know, yoga moms enjoy.
Sure, of course. Right, so the idea is there. The relationship is there, which is super important if you're going to start a business with someone. Mm-hmm. But then comes execution, right? You could have an idea. You can be the best of friends, get along great, but then you have to sit down and execute. You had this experience putting on that party, that gala. It worked out well. I would imagine that you two have spent hours and hours tasting weird liquids that would eventually turn into ghost town oats,
right? One time I drank so many different oat milks that, like, I almost threw up. Yeah. And I was only taking, like, sips. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to throw up if I have another sip of oat milk. So we've literally tasted every oat milk that is or that was available in January of 2021. And we knew what we hated and what we liked, and a lot of what we hated, because, you know, we're baristas. We're trained to, like...
We're very pretentious.
Think about... It's not pretension. Like, that's the thing.
I'm very pretentious. let me be...
People think it's pretension, but it's not. It's like, you have a vision, or, like, I feel like I have a vision, and I know what I want to taste. And I'm like, okay, it's problem solving. It's like, what is it that I don't like, and what is causing what I don't like? And you pick those things out, and then you solve to get rid of those things or make those things better. And that's what we do all the time as baristas. When you dial in a coffee or whatever, you're drinking something, be like, what do I not like about this? And what do I hate about this? And then how can I manipulate all the variables and figure out how to get something that I like? Because if I know if I like it, then other people will like it.
Which very much was like the thought going into this process is like, if we know that if we like it, tons of other people are definitely going to like it. We've just been doing this for too long.
Right.
And like, we have tastes. Like we come from families that are cooks and come from areas with very good food. So we just wanted to bring all that together because this wasn't going to just be any other oat milk that we have already seen and worked with in the coffee shop space. It was going to be something that had to be inclusive of a demographic that hadn't been spoken to, and that demographic wants some good taste and stuff.
They certainly do, just like anyone else. And I love, Ezra, that you're buying what I'm selling, this idea of problem solving, because I can hear it right there in your retelling of finding the proper product. But for folks who are entrepreneurs who want to create their own food product, not necessarily milk or milk alternative, what advice might you have for going through that process and finding the right recipe for your product?
Same thing. You know, if you have a product and that thing exists, say I want to make applesauce.
Love applesauce.
Think about what do you like about applesauce and what do you hate about applesauce? Write all those things down. And then think about each thing you hate, what affects that? Each thing that you like, what affects that? And then start iterating, single out those variables and change one variable and be like, oh, this tastes better, but then it makes this taste weird. So, like, how do you make that not taste weird? And just do it until you get a product that you love.
So if I can parse what you're saying, it's focusing on what tastes or resonates with you. That's the most important.
Yeah. Like, I was always taught, like...
I like some weird stuff with the weird taste. You know what I'm saying?
I was always taught that if you think something tastes good, then other people will think it tastes good. Like, we're not as weird and particular as we like to think. We just have to get people on board with what we like. And, you know, people just need to know what to expect, what they're getting. That's the big thing. So,
Michelle, when did you know you had the product that you wanted?
Actually, when Ezra did the sign off on it, because when we got the final samples to LA, they were overnight shipped and they're supposed to be cold. They did not tell me when they were shipping it, so I was not home, and it was the summer of 2021, so they were bad.
Yeah, they were just frozen jugs.
Pretty much.
In a thermal packaging.
But Ezra was there at home and got the final, and like, I trust Ezra with a lot of things, including the formulation of this oat milk. So I was very anxious for about 7 months, not having tried the final product. But Ezra's like, no worries, I got it. It's fine. Because Ezra's a Q grader, which is like the sommelier of coffee. So I was like, okay, all right, that's fine. But once I finally got like the blue sample carton and I tasted it, I pretty much almost cried. Like, I couldn't believe that we had, from a distance with a team just kind of back and forth across the country, had been able to formulate an oat milk in under a year.
You guys kind of postal service the
pretty much.
Exactly.
So, okay, let's go back now. So this is 2021, right? You've got this killer product.
Right.
You're both happy about it. It didn't come to you in the right shape. We trust Ezra. Eventually you taste it, emotional about it. Now comes getting people to drink it, right? Distributing it, right? So you two called on your coffee connections to get this stuff in cafes all across town, especially here in Los Angeles. I think you launched with what you thought would be 4 to 6 months of inventory.
Yeah.
And it went much quicker, right?
2 months.
Yeah.
2 months. So how did you do that?
Well, to back it back up.
Let's back it up.
We are the baddest bitches in coffee. people love us and people trust us for all those reasons that, you know, we've already gone over. So when they all found out that we were making a product, they're like, I'm sold. And we didn't really realize that until we launched our WeFunder, which is like how do you explain WeFunder? It's like a crowdsourcing.
Equity crowdfunding.
Yeah, equity crowdfunding, mm-hmm. That's right. And we were like, oh, we'll get like $50 here and there, whatever. But in like 2 days, we were already at like, or 4 days, we were at $100,000.
Sure was.
And, you know, we got up to what, 250?
We got up to 250, and then, you know, they got the platform fees and stuff like that. Sure, so we took away $210,000.
Yeah. And so we were like, oh, damn.
How much time?
It was like 4 days. We were already at the plateau point.
Entrepreneur's dream right there.
We closed it within a couple months.
Some investment outside of that because of the WeFunder campaign. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so...
Jimmy Butler was one of the original supporters, right?
He's a stan. Yes. He's a big stan. Loves it.
And so we knew, like, oh, people believe in us. People want to support us.
Right.
People have expectations.
Yeah, but we were still a couple months away from launching at that point. So it was just like... I believe that we still didn't quite, you know, feel like, oh, this is going to be super, super successful, even though money is quite a big driver of success. But, you know, for us on the team, we're like, we need the physical product. We need it to be in places. And some of the conversations that we had been having with our coffee connections is that, you know, they were really excited, but they were really hoping it didn't suck. Mm. We're like, same. So then came June 2022, which is when we finally launched. And we had two distributors here in LA, one in Chicago, that were the first ones to sell it. And that, like, 8 weeks to sell out 6 months of product was nothing that we could have ever imagined.
Yeah, it was
at that
so
point.
Fast that it was like,
we
oh
didn't
my
even
God.
Have any. Like, where's my stock at home?
Yeah.
Ezra, let's move now to scale. You talked about this idea. You brought up your first WeFunder campaign, netted close to $210,000. How did you get that started and what made it so successful?
We like really, really thought about what messaging we wanted to put out and what it wanted to look like. And that was mostly Michelle, who's the writer, and Eric. Because I will say, my writing is like, I will say, it's great. Period. So they're the more like, you know, floral.
We know
like,
how to tell a story.
Sweet topics. Yeah. So
should I direct this question to Michelle then?
Well, I can tell you what they did. I was there. I witnessed it. But so they put together a very good video that was like, it was like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That like basically distilled everything Michelle talked about her past and everything that we believe in as a company and, you know, showed some local baristas. Oh, they went to Bloom and Plume. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bloom and Plume, of course, is a big coffee shop here in Los Angeles.
Yes.
But go on, yeah.
And Sip and Saunder, also big in L.A. And, yeah, it just captured, you know, our whole vibe very clearly. And
did you focus on some of the big societal issues that are relevant to folks who are doing something similar to you?
Yes. Would you say that, Michelle?
I would say yes, but still with it being very centered around what we were hoping to do just at Ghost Town. Mm. Like the idea, not even the idea, the very real concept of food deserts. And that was talked about in that video. Mm-hmm. And just like connecting that past experience that I had with, you know, here's this girl who is gathering up with her friends and they're all baristas creating this oat milk that is like barista quality, the best that you can think of out there, and trying to connect it back to people who deserve it. And they're therefore feed those people. And like that video really captured this full circle that we were trying to build, that even though we didn't have product at the time when the WeFunder launched, it still found a way to show like, this is going to be something that you'll be able to see very, very soon. Mm-hmm. And funnily enough, a lot of the coffee shops in that WeFunder video are current accounts of ours now. We're still trying to get Bloom and Plume, but.
Well, that's so interesting. I think really relevant for any entrepreneur or someone who's interested in starting their own business. This idea of interjecting your personal experience into your brand, into your video, into your marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe in, like many people believe in manifestation. And there's also, when you're injecting your personal story into what it is that is your work, you are essentially creating those full circle moments to happen, whether it's just an idea or it's something that you're already a few years into the process. Like, there are still things that are going on at Ghost Town weekly that I'm like, wow, this actually taps into, you know, something that happened to me back in the day. Like, you know, for instance, we're going to be filming something at a coffee educational studio later this week. And that coffee educational studio. I'm distilling it's counterculture coffee. But my specialty coffee experience was brought to me by Counterculture Coffee back in 2012. And so it's like these moments of, like, there's always going to be an opportunity to share your story and to share little tidbits, even if it's not a part of the founding story. But if you are so deep into what it is that you do, then, you know, it's like you're going to be in the fabric of the being of the company. So, like, keep sharing that. Keep getting that out there.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, like you said, people like to see a real person to a brand. Yeah. Like, it means more to, like, our peers in the coffee industry that mm-hmm. we made the milk versus, like, anyone else. They're like, right. Oh, actual barista. Like, we right. did this one meeting with a coffee company, and the baristas were so excited that we had actually worked as baristas and we made a milk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that their gears are turning, like, what can I do?
Exactly.
Beyond, you know, being behind the bar. Like, yeah. How can I turn this into to something else? And mm-hmm. I think that's a lot. People miss that. There's, like, so many with coffee. There's so many directions you can go as career-wise. You just have to, like, you know, open your eyes and, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. solve the problem. Like, what do I want to do, and how can I do it within the context of what I'm doing now?
And that's the beauty of entrepreneurship, is you get to create that box.
Yes.
There is no box. There is no blueprint, which is also one of the hardest things about entrepreneurship, because there have been days where I'm calling Ezra, like, I think I'm going to cry. And then I just start crying on the phone, because I'm like, I just wish there was someone who could just tell me what to do. Like, I've never been a CEO before. We've never ran an oat milk company before. We've managed coffee shops and, like, managed, you know, barista teams and stuff like that. But this is on another level, where we are competing with oat milks that we have used on bar now. And so, like, where's the playbook for that? And we're blessed to be in this position where it's kind of like we're writing it as we're going. And that's not just for oat milk. That's for any entrepreneur. You are writing your own playbook, and that story is meant to be out there.
Right. And I kind of thrive on chaos and madness.
That's true. Well, that's useful.
So I'm like, I wake up and I'm like, what's going to happen today? What fresh hell is going to come to me? Let's do it.
Well, when you find yourself in those places, Michelle, where whether it's imposter syndrome or you're just overwhelmed or you are dealing with the real reality of being an entrepreneur, there are no days off. You don't work, you don't get paid, right? How do you pull yourself out?
Ooh, well, you're speaking to Michelle yesterday, who literally had to pull herself out. That support system, you need it, build it ASAP, and just make sure it is with multiple people who have just something different that they can offer, but it's all still, like, love, care, and compassion. Like, between Ezra, Eric, the rest of the team at Ghost Town, I got a coach, I got a therapist, and, you know, I have a loving partner at home. And, like, if anything else, something that I have an issue with is isolating. And I know that I can lean on those people to pull me out of that. There are plenty of signs where it's just like, oh, we haven't heard from Michelle in a second. Where is she? What's going on over there? And Ezra often has to, he's the one that reminds me, like, hey, at the end of the day, this is just a job. Like, it's okay. Like, it is not life or death. My partner often says, you're not going to die. And I'm like, okay, these are things that do help me, you know, to kind of bring myself back down to earth.
What do I always say? What are they going to do, beat our ass?
Yep.
No.
I have that on a sticky note at my desk. It works.
It works.
Because it's true. Like, who's going to come for you unless you're in the mob? Yeah. That's the type of entrepreneurship we're not going for.
We're not doing that.
So kind of not giving into the fear of it all, and then also being willing to ask for some help.
Yeah.
Speaking of helping, you both do something and the company does something that's really interesting, I think innovative, when it comes to getting folks to help out. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if you invest $100 or more, you actually get a piece of your company. Where did this idea come from and why even do that?
So at the end of 2021, WeFunder reached out to us because I'd never heard that there was a platform where there could be investors that aren't accredited in any way. And an accredited investor is anyone who has over $1 million in assets. Now, that cuts out a lot of people.
And you don't say.
Yeah. And so many of the people that we have worked with, it cuts us out. And, you know, the people that we want to serve. So the idea to move forward with that for being a lot of our fundraising was to create this community-centered brand. Like, we don't want to just use the fact that this is the experience of a community who doesn't have access to things to sell you then a product. Like, how about you get to capitalize off of this too? Mm-hmm. And so that is very much a part of the fabric of our company. I mean, so many of our friends, baristas, old bosses are investors, right, which is really cool. And it also allows for us to lean on them for support when we need it. And, you know, the goal is that we get to take this company to some very big heights and pay them back.
Another thing is a lot of the older companies, you know, they made their monies and they built their brand off our backs back in, like, you know, 2015 to 17. And we had nothing to show for it except some T-shirts and some pins and stuff. So, you know.
Are you talking about the coffee companies you worked for?
Yeah, well, or not coffee companies, but like
oat milk
companies, plant-based milk companies, you know. Yeah. They kind of built that off our backs, and so.
Off the backs of baristas.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we made them popular because, you know, the, say, for instance, the editor of Vogue is always in our coffee shop. So when we have this product and they see that and they're like, oh, this is the new, best new product. There you go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, we wanted to bring in baristas to, like, actually, so they too can actually benefit from our success.
So they can also benefit, and you're doing something that supports them as well,
yes,
which I think is really, really interesting. Why not go for VC, for venture capital, instead?
Well, we wanted to build a community, though, first.
Yeah, we did want to build that community first. Because that community, especially early on, pre-product, was the traction. That's all we had to show.
Yeah.
For the fact that we were even had an inkling of success ahead of us. Now, once we had product and started to have coffee shops and all these other people hop on, we did try to go the VC route. But we also found that it was a lot more fun going after really interesting angel investors like a Jimmy Butler, who are just like, look, y'all don't have a lot of background to, like, prove that you could build a multi-million dollar plant-based milk company. Like, that's for sure. But he believed in us enough and believed in, you know, our coffee experience and the fact that it was a very good oat milk,
right,
to invest in us. But now in 2024, as we're beginning to look into the future of scaling and not just being, you know, just based here in LA and Chicago and a few other markets, we really want to become nationally distributed. Mm. So that is requiring some bigger dollars. And I think that we're up for the challenge of bringing on VC money and, you know, taking hold of the responsibility that comes with, because that's something that scared me for sure in the past. It's like, am I ready to hold VC dollars? Like,
right. Well, let me ask you about that. This idea of responsibility. I would imagine that also sits with both of you in both a physical but also in a mental way, right? This responsibility, not just of having a quality product, but you're kind of representing something bigger than just 100%. The company, right?
Yeah. We say all the time that it's much bigger than oat milk here at Ghost Town. And the responsibility of not just bringing quality access to a product to people or wanting to represent the coffee industry in a certain way or represent baristas, you know, for me, leading the company, it's also the responsibility of taking care of this team. Like, I want to create an environment where I could hire people who have worked from the coffee industry and hospitality, don't have startup experience, but we're able to get them, you know, into a new space where they can take, because there are skills at the coffee shop that are totally transferable. And so I've seen it. I know it. I've transferred those own skills. And so I want to be able to take people from point A to point B, and whether they stay with Ghost Town forever or they move on to other things, it's just like people see on that resume that they got this very specific kind of high pressure environment to, you know, build something that is bigger than just oat milk. And that responsibility weighs on me a lot. I can't lie about that. But it also is like, I kind of asked for this. Like, I was tired of other people telling me what to do and, like, taking care of their responsibility. So I would much rather create the responsibility and do it on my own.
I know. I think about being able to just, like, roll out of bed, walk the dog, do some work, go walk the dog again, and, like, just having a very, like, high quality of life and creating something
right,
of our own.
Right. Like, we may not be paid a whole lot, but the quality of life is definitely a lot higher. Yeah.
Something that entrepreneurship can give to you both.
Yes. Yes.
And you have other options for doing this besides us here at Shopify. You can choose whoever you'd like. Mm-hmm. What is it about Shopify that fits what you're trying to do with Ghost Town Oats?
Truthfully, it's the ease. Like, the ease of being able to have the website and the store all in one, having just so many different Shopify developers to choose from to help us. You know, I used to be that girl who stayed up late at night making websites on MySpace, and so I did that with Shopify.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so, like, I got to kind of feel that again, and I have tried it with many other platforms, and it wasn't shaken. So it's definitely ease, and, you know, y'all are very good at what you do. Like, why? I don't know. Why would we go with anybody else?
Ezra, do you concur?
I mean, my experience is with the accounting and bookkeeping side, and it makes it easy. It's very easy.
That's interesting. What makes it easy? I mean, because I think for folks who are trying to make that decision, or even maybe on a different platform considering switching, those decisions can be hard to make. You're saying bookkeeping is easy. That's awesome.
Just, the money shows up on the QuickBooks, and I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
That's how it, like, because there's plenty of other things that are way more complicated that should be that easy, and they are not. As a person who's never bookkeep before or never looked at money things, trust me.
As the person who set up the Shopify, I can let you know that the
Ezra says it's great. But go
right,
ahead.
Right. I have it set up so that it is that easy. Okay, there's daily payouts, and everything just shows up as one line item. The taxes are very seamless to try and set up. You know, I was able to work closely with our accountant. I think just the fact that Shopify being so popular of a platform has all these different resources where it's like my accountant understands it, my developer understands it, like a web designer, or even I can simply understand it. We sell a lot of our merchandise, like not oat milk, but, you know, hoodies and sweatshirts and things like that on Shopify. Even to have our apparel folks like be able to very seamlessly come into the back end of the platform and manage all of the customer service. It's like it's a one-stop shop for e-commerce. And when we do eventually go that D2C route for oat milk, we're just like, it's gonna be a no-brainer.
Which brings me to my next question. So I'm so happy that you set me up that way, teeing me up. What is next for you guys? Sounds like D2C is on the horizon, but what are the plans that you two have for your brand?
What's next for Ghost Town is raising a massive round of funding through mostly VC and large angel investment, including the WeFunder. And we are going to completely just like bust out the seams as far as national distribution in the wholesale and B2B space. We know and understand that there is retail. We know that there is D2C, that we can do e-commerce, all of that. But we have just barely scratched the surface. And just to put into perspective, like barely scratched the surface. Our first year of sales, we did $407,000 and we were around for 6 months at that point. Last year, we ended the year at $2.1 million. And wow. That's still only being available in LA, Chicago, a couple of coffee shops in Toronto, a few in DC,
New York,
and whoever is in Mexico.
Even that's successful.
Right. And that is successful. So there's so much more to do. There are 39,000 coffee shops.
Yeah.
In the U.S. And that also doesn't include the restaurants, the hotels, like food service in general. So we want to completely saturate that because we are hospitality professionals. Right. I think we want to make sure that we serve that first. And then from there, once we have a handle on that, I'm like, okay, let's move on to the next thing. So 2025, 2026, we'll be looking at retail. D2C is going to happen somewhere in the middle of that.
Right.
Because the
We're
way...
We're teeing it up.
Yeah, right. The way that y'all are knocking at our doors out there will not stop DMing us about when y'all can order it online. It's definitely going to come sooner than later. And then also we want to grow this team.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I keep asking Ezra to move to LA and he's just, I'm just going to keep asking.
It's called rent control department. I'm not leaving.
It's great for an entrepreneur. Find you a rent control department.
We might not be leaving, but we're so happy that you came here to LA today. And Michelle, thank you so much. Ezra Baker, Michelle Johnson, two of the three co-founders of Ghost Town Oats. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was a blast.